Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. Hello, Natalie. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you very much for joining me on this Friday afternoon. I seem to find myself on Friday afternoons doing these kind of things, and it's quite a nice way to end the week. Thank you for joining me.
Anytime.
Natalie, why don't you very quickly, for those of the audience that don't know you or know of you, why don't you do a quick intro and a bit on your background, and then we can dive into some topics.
Yeah, sure. So I've been practicing as a lawyer since 2007. And in the last year or so have gone fractional. It's a buzzword that we find ourselves hearing a lot more in the legal profession. Effectively, what does that mean? I don't like to use the word consulting because I think it has bad connotations, but effectively somebody who goes into businesses and helps operate their legal function. And that's not on a full-time basis necessarily. It's more of a coming in for organisations that don't really need a full-time person but want that expertise. So I go in as a fractional general counsel. And I've been doing that for a number of clients for the past year or so, which has been, really interesting.
Awesome. And where were you practicing before?
So I actually trained at a law firm called Taylor Wessing in London. I did my training contract there and then unfortunately qualified in 2009 when the markets were absolutely terrible. So interestingly, I was working on the packaging up of subprime mortgages because I was working in our in our finance department where we're working for companies like GMAC and effectively doing asset sales. So I feel like I probably deserve to have my career cut short in some ways in that private practice environment. But I was quite lucky. I then found a role at Travelex, a three-month contract that I took a chance on. And that was the beginning of my career in-house.
Awesome. So you've been in-house ever since?
Yeah, and I was quite lucky because I was there for about 2.5 years. I think sort of going into a company so early, I had that mentality of, what do I have to bring? Because back then, it was quite unusual for junior lawyers to find themselves in-house. People expected you to get at least 5 years under your belt before you moved in-house and, understand a little bit more of the practice of law. Unfortunately, I just didn't get that privilege. So going in as a very junior qualified lawyer, I felt like I had to kind of justify my existence, but not in an aggressive competitive way, just more of a how can I demonstrate adding value? And those are the sorts of things I thought about very early on in my career that now are very much common parlance in in-house legal teams. So I think that opportunity and going in so junior, I tried to find opportunities to show where I could add value. So whether it was intelligent data capture in a database, not like sexy stuff, but why are we scanning our contracts in? Do we have the right data points? Do we know what's in them? All just became sort of a natural piece of trying to do something that could be seen as quite junior and administrative and doing it in an intelligent way. But I think, having done that for a few years at Travelex, along with sort of general commercial data protection, tech law, I found myself sort of thinking about, what do I do? Am I getting access to the sort of work that's going to help me grow? And so I was really lucky that at 2.5 years qualified, I actually went into my first head of legal role for a SaaS company.
Oh, wow.
So SaaS startup, scale up, 250 employee company. And that was the start of my running legal teams experience. And I've tried not to step down to that profile ever since.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. So, I mean, I think that jump early on, whilst it was unfortunate and sort of not of your making, it's this kind of thing that those kind of environments and situations make people and convert them into looking at the non-conventional pathways for careers and everything else, because you've got to adapt and you've got to think about what happens next and how that operates. That's really cool. I'm going to come back to some of that early lawyering sort of value add kind of stuff, because, you know, putting data, metadata into a database and structuring stuff is all the rage now with like AI and large language models and all the glory that is technology these days. What I wanted to jump into really though, at the very beginning, I mean, as a junior lawyer going in-house, what was the role of an in-house lawyer, and the in-house lawyer function? It varies from organizational size to organizational size, and you've got big teams, small teams, and everything else. How have you seen that change, and what have you seen the changes? You talked about sort of some of the things that are normal now or expected now. Are they the only things? What kind of, I don't know, skills have you seen that have come through in sort of like prevalence in that sense?
I think a lot of people who came in-house, say, you know, 15 odd years ago, were coming from a private practice mentality and background. So I think legal functions tended to operate much more akin to like a mini team in a law firm.
Yeah.
And that hierarchical approach, whereas I think now it's much more task-based. And so you can think about what does it make sense for a certain person that costs a certain amount to be doing, or what are they interested in, and what are the needs of the business? And that whole, you know, business partnering, we hear a lot as another buzzword these days. And I think back then, just talking about my mentality and approach, it was probably naturally doing that because of where I was coming from. Whereas I think if I'd have acted more akin to a traditional in-house legal function, it still was a little bit, you know, are you generating work, or are you expecting people to come to you, for example? Or, you know, how proactive are you being? Are you seeing this more as a holistic thing, or are you trying to do the sexy stuff that gets you more noticeable in the company and those sorts of things? And yeah, I think there's a lot of those politics that go into it. I think nowadays I do feel like it's much more operationally focused. And so the legal advisory element to it is an element of it, but we have to behave as a function rather than as advisors. And so there's much more expectation to help make decisions, or even make decisions as a team, rather than just go, here's some options, bye, good luck, which I think is a much more of the sort of private practice approach. And you normally have to sort of squeeze, well, come on, in your opinion, from your other clients and your market understanding, what should I do? And you can see the deep uncomfort that you get from some private practice lawyers that just don't feel that's part of what they do. But ultimately, that's what I believe we're paying them for. And I think the in-house role is much more decision maker, operator, getting stuff done, and just like any other department in a business. And I think there's definitely been a shift of that ivory tower lawyer, you come to us, we deign legal advice on you too. You're just another business function, actually. Then we're getting criticized and measured in the same way as other departments. So where is our data? Where is our metrics? Why do we think that it's so difficult to put a price on what we do and how we add value? When every other team in the organisation is expected to. So I think we've had to adopt more of a mind shift to being more like other business areas rather than seeing ourselves as separate. And I think that's led to people getting a bit sort of upset about, you know, lawyers not being treated X, Y, and Z way. But ultimately, we're nothing special as such, at least in a company ecosystem. We have a particular background and a lens that we offer advice through. And maybe that's legal risk, but, you know, we're only successful as the clients that come to us within those organisations and the impact we're able to make. And so there's quite a lot, I think, you can do in a more holistic sense of being, you know, the breadwinner in terms of the partner getting the work in, the technical expert, or if it's not you, how do you then blend that with an external advisor, an expert, you know, more junior resource? I think there's much more of that holistic approach to legal service delivery. And including technology, as well as like operational efficiency. It's all those sorts of things that are not unique to a legal function.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I talked to a whole bunch of different people in the ecosystem, and you sort of, it's the idea that it's not just a silent seat at the table that nods or just sort of goes, yes, you can do that, or no, you can't do that. It's, as you say, it's much more operational. It's the seat at the table, but it's the active seat at the table where decisions are being made. And it's really sort of that day-to-day adding value, as opposed to, I need to go to legal to ask a question. It's right, how do we deliver this or do this in the best way from the ground up? Which I think it's that cultural shift, isn't it? As you describe it, sort of it's different from private practice to go in-house. You're expected to be able to do different things, but the mentality historically, as you've said and others that I've spoken to, it's been, well, I'm going to do how I did it in the old ways, in the old function, as an advisor, as a almost transactional process. Like, you're going to come to me and I'm going to go to there. Actually, no, I want to be involved in stuff. I want to understand the business and get my hands dirty as such, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes it a much more interesting role than it probably perhaps historically has been.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's easy to get pigeonholed in a particular practice area in private practice, perhaps even in large legal teams in-house. But I do think there's much more scope for creativity and, yeah, ultimately the way that you can influence your own career in-house, I think, is much more flexible than perhaps the more traditional lawyer roles in private practice. And I think that makes it quite exciting. And it also means that, you know, there's so many opportunities out there that you can pivot to and do, and not necessarily just law as well.
No, I was going to touch on that. Do you see, so is that there's a statistic written on a piece of paper somewhere that I can't see, so I'm not going to start ruffling it around. But the growth of the in-house sort of market, or the amount of work that's being delivered by an in-house function on average, and I don't know industry to industry or anything else, but it's on the up in comparison to how much is getting passed out to the advisors, the private practice side of things. What are the factors that are coming into that? Do you think it's partly that cultural shift of people coming in and doing slightly different, or bringing more operational stuff to the thing? Is it an expectation of the underpinning corporate in terms of what that's doing? Is it technology? There's probably, the answer is probably all of the above, but I mean, I'm just trying to get from you what you're seeing in terms of the trends of how much work's being kept inside because it can be done relatively easier these days, or organizations are better suited for it, versus traditionally send everything over the fence and we'll use those, we'll pay them, they're experts, we'll keep them in that sense.
I think there's a recognition of the value that having a lawyer in-house can bring that you don't get from that arm's length relationship. So I think there's definitely that. Equally, external lawyers generally are expensive. And so if you're comparing the cost of going to an expert externally versus the cost of a hire, and now, as we've seen with my most recent roles, you're getting this fractional model as well, then, you know, wouldn't you want to invest in somebody who can get to know your business more and equally isn't potentially bound by constraints in the way that they have to deliver that advice because they're ultimately scared of getting sued, right? You know, how much can you advise in a external capacity? And I think it's interesting, I was chatting to a few people that run these alternative legal business service providers who are hiring people like me to do things on a sort of a multiple client basis. And some of them kind of try to call themselves law firms. I don't get it. I mean, unless you need to do regulated or reserved activities, then okay. But I think as a fractional general counsel, I'm not trying to emulate a partner in a law firm. I'm trying to emulate somebody who is full-time in your business and is accessible as if they were somebody who was in your business full-time. And I think that's a very different advisory standard in terms of expectations of how technically excellent the advice is versus the 80% rule. It's good enough. It can mean we can move forward and get stuff done. And so I wouldn't like to be held to the external law firm standard because I think that does stifle creativity. We've seen it. A lot of lawyers, we're risk averse naturally. We're perfectionistic. We don't like getting things wrong. So we don't want that to have an adverse effect on our clients either. So I think the models or the alternative ways of companies getting access to really high quality legal support is more diverse than it's ever been. I think that's why you're getting more people, A, attracted to an in-house career, as we've said before, because there is that flexibility, creativity, you know, I was running a legal team at 2.5 years qualified. I was 27. You wouldn't have heard of that really. Even then, that was very unusual. But now people are recognizing that if you can have founders who are in their 20s and, you know, we're more than happy to give them respect for that, then you can probably have somebody in a legal function supporting that founder, a similar sort of age group. So I think we just have to be a bit more, I think we have to give people credit for their abilities and the fact that nobody knows everything. And, you know, how sensible are you in terms of your ability to advise and help get stuff done? And, you know, we're all growing on the job, we're all learning. But I think there's a lot of value to be had without being an absolute expert in one particular thing or everything.
Yeah. And you look at it, and I worked inside of a law firm, and I've sold technology to law firms and corporates. So I know enough to be dangerous. I know enough to say the right words in a sentence that sort of sounds okay, but that's dangerous sometimes. But, you know, you look at it and you go, everyone's measured on how many years of private practice they are. Oh, yeah, I'm 4 years qualified. I'm 5 years qualified. That's got no reference to how good the lawyer is, really. Mm. It's got no reference to their operational savviness or where they might be or what they, you know, for me, it just seems like it's a number, and it doesn't, it means something because it's recognized, but actually it's not a skill. It's not, it doesn't actually truly mean a reference of how expert somebody is. It just means that somebody's survived 5 years or whatever, which sounds terrible, but you know, that's the way that my simple brain operates sometimes. But I think that's the thing that sort of more people, and since you moved in-house and the opportunities that it's given you, you know, you start looking at what's important and the skills that are important to be that kind of lawyer, not the lawyer that is in private practice. And I remember reading about Dan and his quite initial sort of O-shaped lawyer kind of what does that mean? What does it look like? How do we think about things? And what should we be doing differently? And when that first started getting talked about, I was thinking that does feel different. And it does feel kind of, I mean, not different, but it's sort of bringing to the forefront some of the things and the sort of skills that these kind of business operators rather than lawyers will need. And I think that was a big thing. I don't know how much you involved in the O-shaped.
Yeah, I'm on the one of the founding board members, so
there you go. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so still attached, still doing what we do. One of the things we did recently was over the last couple of years, we've done awards for recognising people on our O-list. So people that are nominated by their peer group to say how they demonstrated one of the 5-0 attributes. And that's been a really nice way of recognising people that are anywhere in the legal ecosystem and doing some really amazing things. And yeah, going back to what you were saying, what was historically viewed as sort of soft skills, human skills are now being recognised as absolutely important in any career now, especially with the advent of AI. A lot of easy things are going to be automated. So what makes us relevant is more how we're human and how we interact with each other and how we read rooms, signals, sensors that can't be replicated by a computer. I think a lot more education should be focusing on that for children coming up into, you know, the ecosystem, the world of work, and then equally for people that are in the world of work that we find ourselves in, recognising that we're going to have to pivot our ability to judge ourselves on these things, the ability to get things done, the ability to be affable, you know, how you can see and interrogate information and find the right answer, even though the sources could be lying or hallucinating. Those are the things that are really important now. And so, you know, back in the day, it would have been, how can you find research something in a book? And now the information's there, especially as lawyers, we have a lot of this stuff at our fingertips. How do we interpret it in a way that's going to be helpful to our clients and accurate? And, you know, these are skills that are really important. And if we are more mindful of them, we're more likely to be able to improve them and do something about it. Whereas if we're still thinking the old school way, you know, a lot of opportunity is going to pass us by, and we're going to find ourselves in very tricky situations where perhaps our skills haven't really developed with the market expectations.
Yeah. I think that the rate of change on the tech side is ridiculous at the moment. And I think that's hard for any it's hard for any industry, it's hard for any organization to keep up with that sort of stuff. But before I get onto that, I'm just going to, you were talking about soft skills and everything else. When I was at CMS for like 10 years, something like that, I was in IT. I'd come and fix your mouse and sort out your BlackBerry and that sort of stuff. Change your printer. You know, it's fun stuff back in the early days. But it was like there was this soft skills list of training courses that sort of were run for lawyers. And I was like, can I go on these things? There's like, things like speed reading. I mean, I can't read particularly fast. So I thought if I can improve the rate I can read, not to lawyer level, then that might be a good idea. But it was really interesting, sort of the idea that there is a non-lawyering soft skills list of things that you could go and sign up for and go and do. And it was like, but it was almost like an extra thing. It was like a thing that was over there. It's like, if you've got time, you could do this stuff. Rather than nowadays, and I'm not saying speed reading is the thing that everyone should be doing, but, you know, the idea that you should be learning and thinking different ways of operating and doing stuff is really important. I just wanted to say, because I have speed reading. I mean, I don't know why I even sat there for 45 minutes. I don't even remember any of it, quite frankly. And I don't think my rate of reading has improved. I can still barely read, let alone read fast. But, you know, talking about change, we've talked about cultural changes, the expectations of sort of a modern lawyer inside of a corporate and being that sort of business ally, that operator in that sense. How much is technology playing a part in your roles? I don't know how many roles you are doing at the moment as a fractional GC, but maybe prior to that, the pace of change, the expectation of technology influencing and enabling legal work, whether it be from a research perspective or drafting or whatever it might be. How do you keep up with everything that's going on? I mean, it's just bonk. I can't keep up and I'm in tech. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think there's probably been a bit too much of a flooding of the legal tech market over the last few years. Everybody seems to be jumping on the bandwagon, which I think has been making it really difficult for in-house legal to work out what it is that they want or what it is that they should choose. And as I alluded to before, lawyers don't like getting it wrong. And so aren't very good at taking the risk to just give it a go and see if it does have some improvement and be comfortable that it's better than it was before. It may not be perfect. But I think having a natural curiosity, so going back to these human skills we were talking about, I'm very curious. Anything that's kind of sexy and interesting, you know, I try to keep on top of and you know, look into and see it sort of as a hobby. But ultimately, it's very integral to being a successful legal professional now.
Yeah,
there are some really useful websites. I think, I don't know if you know Richard Troman's, but he's got the Artificial Lawyer site. And for years, he's been doing a very good synopsis of the different tech tools and providers out there, which I've always said to people who are a little bit overwhelmed, at least he clusters the different types of service offering that are out there and then gives his own sort of estimation as to what he thinks about the providers. So that helps people gather some thought. A lot of people go to conferences now. I think there's a massive conference scene for legal tech sponsors to exhibit what they do. And so for people that are a bit scared, it's always a good way of just getting a demo and understanding a little bit more about what it is. But I think it's about a lot of people, it's when I was chatting to somebody today about people procuring software, and some people just want something shiny and sexy and fun, don't really think about what is the use case or problem they're trying to solve. Yeah. So for me, it's thinking about the problem and then what potential solutions there are, and technology may be part of one of those solutions or maybe the solution, but it's that way around. It's the solution focus rather than I want tech, it's going to make my life better. You know, sometimes if you've got a very small legal team and there's a lot of onboarding time that's required, it might just be better to just crack on manually because it's just easier in the short term and maybe even the medium term. But if you've got, you know, more volume of certain types of contracts or you've got particular repetitive work and a larger team, well, actually, it almost makes a little bit more sense to to sort of move over some tasks that are not particularly helpful and implement more systems. So I always think about what it is that we're trying to solve, and then, you know, is there a budget available for these things? And actually, there are a lot of tools that are already in organisations that can be repurposed for legal tasks without spending any money. And I think everybody goes, we need some legal tech. No, maybe you just need some tech. And maybe you just need to put a legal lens over it and think a little bit about what you're trying to do and utilise what you've got. And then if that's still not working, then that helps you build your business case. But we've already got so many tools in organisations. And the more sophisticated, you know, G Suite's coming, and Microsoft Office and the other fringe pieces to it, whether that's the AI elements of Copilot and Gemini, there's just so much available now that you don't need to build a massive business case for or cause a load of alarm, because it's already part of the tech stack.
And I think that's, you've said a couple of things there, which is trends I've seen over the years, which is actually making do with what you've got. And, you know, that there are times when a specific piece of legal tech is important, and a piece of tech might be important, but actually looking at your shelfware, as it's called, and sort of scanning through that and seeing what you can do. And I don't know the answer to this bit, which is legal 5-6 years ago, it was always sort of told to me that in-house legal never really got their own budgets for technology. It was always through central IT. It was always a pain. So it was always tricky, and it was always slow and everything else. And I don't know if that's changed, but I now know that there are, you know, big organizations that have got legal ops professionals who go out and sort of buy technology, who are experienced at buying and implementing technology. Do you see that sort of legal ops technology role sort of coming downstream in terms of that kind of influence, or organizations where you're working, where perhaps you're one of two or one of one humans that are responsible for the legal function? It doesn't, I can imagine it doesn't make any sense to go off and buy some tech or have the experience to go off and reconfigure SharePoint to make it and look at it through the legal lens as you describe it. But are you seeing those kind of technology trends and the rise of maybe legal professionals, but non-lawyer professionals inside of a legal function delivering those experts, almost like the innovation teams inside of a law firm, perhaps?
Yeah, but I think you need a bigger budget because you've got more bodies that are just focusing on those specific types of area rather than having a generalist legal advisor that also thinks about these things. So generally, I've worked in very lean legal teams, and I take on people that have that natural curiosity too, want to deliver their legal services in an efficient and technologically enabled way.
Yeah.
So that's what I prioritise. And yes, I think if there was more need for it, I could see the value of having somebody that's dedicated. But in all of the teams I've run, I've kind of tried to have everybody collectively have an interest in this and see if we can, you know, collectively implement solutions instead.
How big's the biggest team you've worked in that's operated in that kind of way?
So I had a team of, I think it was 17 at Fleet Corps, and they were scattered mainly in Russia and then across Europe, the UK. And I was also responsible for other geographies, but that's where the kind of bodies were based. And you know, we made do with just being clever with the systems that we had. So I think it was a process driven, collaboratively sort of sharing information organization within the function.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But you know, having somebody specifically dedicated to that. Generally, I think having paralegals and trainees that are a little bit more interested in these sorts of things, and actually they're the ones who would be doing the more menial work anyway. It's kind of in their interest to operationalize it and try and make it slicker so they have access to more interesting work and can grow. So I've used that as a way of incentivizing innovation or creativity and trying to put things in place and getting a bit more buy-in that way. But it can be quite difficult with more senior lawyers who just don't want to change the way they deliver their services. And so where I've inherited legal teams that have that mentality, it can be quite tricky. because you're kind of stuck with a mindset problem. It's a fixed mindset issue rather than a growth mindset. And they may be very good lawyers, but, you know, to me, that isn't enough to be a really kind of high valued member of my team. You have to have more than that.
Yeah. Do you think sort of, I remember, and this goes back 15, maybe 16 years. So I used to get, I was part of the IT function at CMS, and I used to get wheeled out to help onboard the new trainees. So, hi, we're IT, we're here to help. You just press control, alt, delete and walk away and everything's going to be fine. But I had to do like a 30-minute intro, and it was really interesting. You get to chat to these sort of 20, 21-year-old sort of kids, and they would go, why do I have to go on 7 days worth of IT training? Because I don't need to know how to format a Word document or learn how to dictate or learn. And they were sort of challenging, even back then, the status quo of like, yes, we have to go on this training and do this and do that and how to use a document management system properly and all, you know. And these days, as you say, so lawyers coming out of university now, they're typing as fast as they can dictate. They're using the tools that are available to them. You've seen secretaries transition to become more PAs and personal assistants rather than typing. And, you know, all of this is changing as part of that. But those inherent skills in those, I mean, my 17-year-old son, he's technology like up to here. You know, he loves it and he lives it. And, you know, apart from don't press the big red button, that's the sort of only training he's probably going to need from a technology perspective. But that talks to the kind of people that you want in your team, if that makes sense. That's sort of, yeah, technology savvy, technology curious or curious in general, expert because they've trained to become a lawyer. But, you know, what those soft skills, those bits, they add a tremendous amount of value and opportunity to expand, grow, and sort of deliver more value to the business and within the function itself. Kids. They're just all still too clever these days. Question for you. What drove the transit? And it's a bit of a weird one, but it's not. What drove you to think about doing this new trendy fractional GC kind of role? What was it something that you were looking to do? Was it something sort of opportunistic? Was it market forces? I don't know.
So many years ago, I got made redundant in 2020.
Okay.
I remember then considering this model because I think, you know, I've been fortunate to work for a number of different companies, but sometimes some of those companies haven't had the best leadership or the best culture. Yeah. And I think ultimately this time round, culminating in the end of January last year, I think I got to a point where I'd actually fallen out of love with law. I'd fallen out of love with what I was doing because I didn't feel we're getting fairly compensated. I don't think a lot of lawyers get the voice or ability to influence that we can really add value by doing. And, you know, especially talking about the salary piece, you know, you've got junior lawyers in US law firms earning more than heads of legal and GCs in some quite complex businesses that require quite a lot of skills to be able to manage risk and sometimes very big personalities who are looking to do things which are usually quite close to a particular line.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes a lot of skill and, you know, a lot of fortitude. And if you're not going to get recognised for that, it doesn't feel particularly fair. So I think when I was coming around to it in February, I felt like I was actually thinking of going into selling this proposition rather than doing it because I thought, I don't want to look at anyone, I'm just dumb. But actually through a blend of getting, you know, immediate work when I sort of left my last role.
Yeah.
And then attaching to an agency. So there was, as I alluded to, there's a number of different alternative business structures out there. I attached to a firm called Seven Legal. Really nice small outfit that is getting some really interesting clients on that fractional GC basis. There are a number of providers out there, the Legal Direct is another, Legal Edge, and these are really good organizations that are effectively doing the the back office and sales function for you to be able to do the sort of work that you want to as a lawyer.
Yeah.
And so I think when you're a bit uncertain as to how to go about this, how to get clients, how to market yourself, because all you've ever done is, you know, been in an organisation, I think it's a really nice way of easing yourself into a career doing this. And what you realise is that when people realise that you're available and they don't have to pay you full time and that you're actually doing this on a fractional basis, you know, I've had a lot of people that I've worked with historically who reached out and said, hey, I've got this project, or, you know, we've been thinking about this, we'd love to have somebody of your calibre on board, you know, how can we get you involved without it breaking the bank? And I really enjoyed being able to come up with offerings that support people and they're still getting a good deal, but I'm actually doing better financially than I was in full-time employment, and, you know, not really getting anywhere with, you know, when have we all had bonuses for the last 5 years, you know, in a meaningful way. It's you know, it's not the sort of times that it was sort of 10, 15 years ago. So I do think this model works for clients because it gives them access to people like us, rather than, you know, perhaps I'm sort of doing myself a disservice in some way, but when I was a 2.5 year qualified lawyer taking on that head of legal role and being paid peanuts for it, it's good for my learning and the business got somebody who was very conscientious and did a good job. But then actually, are they missing something in not having somebody who's done it before, but is still dynamic and can do it for a decent price point? And then I think, you know, a lot of GCs have been struggling with that sort of reporting line. Are they reporting into the CEO? Do they have a seat on the board? You know, are they able to influence if there is something that they're uncomfortable with, etc.? And I do think this more fractional approach gives it just that enough amount of independence that you don't feel trapped. And I think it's easier to say what you really want to say as a consultant or an external person whilst really feeling part of it. I think it's the best of both worlds for us. And then the flexibility on how you work, how hybrid it is, you know, what hours are you going to do the work in? You know, ultimately, it's much more delivery focused. Yes, you've got to be available for calls and certain meetings with, you know, the board or senior stakeholders. But I think there is that flexibility not to have to work full time if you don't want to, but while still feeling attached to an organisation sufficiently to have the impact that I think a lot of us search for in our role, because that's what makes it feel more worthwhile. So I think that's been really liberating for me. And then, you know, if you're external, you're getting paid a certain amount. And if there is an NDA that happens to pop across your desk, you're not cursing it and going, this is a really crap use of my time. You're thinking more holistically, I'm your function. And you know, this is, you know, once every now and again. And it doesn't matter, because it's about the blend of impacts that you can have as an individual, rather than I feel a little bit more, if I'm in a permanent role, I'm a little bit more fixated on, you know, what are the cultural dynamics? What are the politics? Mm. You know, is this going to, you know, be worthwhile, etc.? I think this kind of takes that sort of immediacy of that impact out of it, and it's definitely allowed me to be a bit more philosophical and actually a bit more patient, and, you know, just recognize that they brought me on for a reason. I think that's another point. I think when you're an employee, I think there's that feeling of almost like master servant sort of relationship where you're owned by an organization, they expect all your time to be dedicated to them. I definitely think that for people that understand what a fractional GC does, there is an appreciation that, you know, yes, we're not going to make them feel like they aren't the most favoured client. However, there is a recognition that we're not sitting at our laptop waiting for you to Teams us immediately for us to pick up, and that we're going to run around and be able to do it. I think there's a bit more give and take. And I think that makes the role feel actually more mature than some of the senior roles that I've had in organisations previously.
I mean, I think it's fascinating. I mean, we've got fractional support on our finance side for our business. Same with legal as well, albeit not quite the same, just through a long-standing relationship with a firm. You know, it's like, it feels like, for our size of business, so we're like 25 people, we've got whatever, you know, it's exactly the kind of route that we would want to go down, because we would want to partner with somebody. We don't need somebody full time. but we want somebody that can invest their thoughts and processes, not just in the outcomes, but also that mutual understanding that there is a collaboration, a connection. It isn't full time, and it isn't, as you say, master servant, but it's that whole idea that, you know, you're going to pick up work and you're going to work for people that actually, and cultures within cultures, that you go, right, this is valuable, this is good for me, not just from a sort of remuneration, but actually the work's interesting, the organization's interesting, they're good humans, they're not dicks, and, you know, just it's good, and you can sort of pick and choose how you go through that.
That portfolio approach and that ability to, you know, say you want to get into, I think there's some really sexy fields out there at the moment, like I'd love to get into robotics, I'd love to get into pharma tech or biotech. There's like just so many like cool things out there. You know, AI is permeating everything right now. And I think even if you're not an expert in it, I think there's a much more of an ability to help an organization that is needing some support and learn with them and grow with them. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. If you're trying to pivot, I think there's much more opportunity to have a broad portfolio of different businesses. I was doing a lot of tech and fintech before. I'm doing an interim GC role at Away Resorts right now, and it's absolutely brilliant because that's holiday parks. That's going back to people and some bricks and mortar and things.
There's an Away Resorts literally a mile from my
flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's three parks on the island.
There's one a mile from my house, literally.
So where are you? Not St Helens.
I'm in Bembridge, so just next to St Helens, yeah.
Yeah, there we go then.
Connections.
Well, exactly. But it's interesting because, you know, I've got my, you know, one of my clients is very AI focused, legal tech. I've got another that's a SaaS product, which is what I've been doing for years. And then, you know, I've got this sort of holiday park place. I just think it's brilliant. Like, you know, you're going to have good days and bad days with each of them. But I think the balancing out of, you know, the different sort of diverse things you're going to be doing for each, it just makes it really, really interesting again. And I think, you know, sometimes it's easy to feel stuck in a particular industry or even organization. And I think the flexibility and the ability to dip in and out of different sectors has been really fun.
Yeah. And I think that's, I was chatting to my 17-year-old son, and he was he doesn't know what he wants to be when he grows up. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. So it's fine. It runs in the family. But he's thinking about making decisions now that might influence what he's doing and sort of casting his eyes over whether he goes to uni or US college or this or that or whatever. And the whole lawyering idea is that you sort of go through your training program and then you sort of specialize in a particular seat in this particular team. And you could end up doing that type of law forever. And, you know, part of me is absolutely scared by that because I love my day to day. Like helping run Autologics is amazing in the sense that no day is the same. Literally no day is the same. I've got prospects, I've got clients, I've got internal stuff, I've got board stuff, I've got you name it, stuff I don't want to do, stuff I do want to do, stuff that I ignore and just forget about. And, you know, but every day is different. And I think that I'm just advocating for that idea and the ideal that you've now got in this fractional sense whereby you can pick and choose which industries you work in. You can sort of where there is relevance and expertise needed. You can go, oh, I'm going to go do some holiday parks and I'm going to go and do some SaaS and I'm going to go do that. And I think that's for certain people, that's really, really important. And I think it's really interesting. Sort of the rise of that kind of idea of that portfolio world is awesome. So when are you coming on holiday to the Isle of Wight?
Well, I'm going for the festival, as you know. And actually, I have booked. So I provisionally book a number of different properties, depending on who's joining me. And actually realised that Away, we get a really decent staff discount. So I'll be staying at the Bay Colwell. So close to the Hut.
Nice. Well, the Hut is a very nice location. So I don't blame you for staying over in that one. But yeah, okay, cool. I mean, Nasi, I find this absolutely fascinating in the sense that your journey, the things that have happened, sort of your early move from private into in-house, all that sort of stuff it's made you what you are now, and sort of maybe if you hadn't have had that sort of early stage change, you wouldn't be so comfortable doing this fractional stuff, or vice versa. I think it's just fascinating. I think it's really fascinating. And thank you for sharing with us, because I think there's loads. There's so, I don't know if you must get this, but there are so many people out there who are probably were in your position, who aren't quite sure if they should make that kind of step or make that kind of change, or are undecided around things. And I think that the more people like you who are open to sharing good things, bad things, and everything else, so I think it's amazing. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, no worries. I'm always happy. If anybody wants any mentoring or just wants to reach out to talk about it, I do speak to a lot of people as they're transitioning from their previous world to the idea of this world. And I'm more than happy to give my take on it and tips, you know, warts and all, so that other people can find the sort of Sedgway in a bit less painful or scary than it may have been for me. But, you know, those are long distant memories.
Well, there you go then. So I will see you, if I don't see you at a legal tech conference or a legal conference before the festival, I will join you for a beer or something like that whilst we're watching some band.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Right. Catch you later on. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather, and I'll see you very soon.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Take it easy. Bye.